It's time for From the Short Grass with Trey Schaap, a golf podcast for those who love golf, struggle with golf, and just like to enjoy the outdoors and fellowship with friends, all while chasing a ball around trying to put it in a 4 1/4 inch diameter hole. From the Short Grass is brought to you by Stevens Incorporated, an independent financial services firm with the freedom to focus on what matters most. Blackman Auctions. For over 80 years, better auctions have always been Blackman Auctions. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels. We partner with you to deliver high-yield results by managing, developing, and investing in top-quality hospitality assets. And now, from the Short Grass, here is your host, Trey Schaap.
Welcome to another edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Schaap. We are 1 week away from the Ryder Cup at Marco Simone Golf and Country Club, which is just an hour's drive from Rome, Italy. The United States has won the Ryder Cup 27 times to just 14 for Europe. However, the last time that the United States team won on European soil was 1993, when Tom Watson captained the United States team to a 15-13 win at the Belfry in Sutton Coldfield, England. Zach Johnson, the United States captain, hoping to keep the trophy and win on European soil for the first time since 1993 next week. Coming up on this edition of From the Short Grass, I sit down with a former PGA Tour member, Korn Ferry Tour member, and he also cut his teeth on the Asian Tour. He has 6 professional wins in his career. Edward Lohr, who is from Dallas, Texas. That's where he was born. Grew up in Rockwall, a suburb of Dallas. He attended college at Oklahoma State University and was a member of their 2000 NCAA Division I championship golf team for the Cowboys. You'll hear a lot about how he became a Cowboy and how difficult life is on the PGA Tour in a matter of minutes. I want to tell you about our friends at Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group, Matthew Allen, Blair Allen. They know how to manage hotel properties. When you need an overnight place to stay, make sure you go to their website, bphotels.com, find one of the properties they manage, and book it. You won't be sad you did, I guarantee you that. We're back with Edward Lohr after this.
Strength is measured not by the number of accounts. Strength is placing value on relationships. It's having the vision and the guts to invest in growth. It's the commitment to responsibly manage your money. At Stevens, we believe that our strengths build success, not only for us, but for our clients. Stevens, member NYSE, SIPC.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are 2 best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
Heading to El Dorado to check out some live music or to play Mystic Creek? Stay at the Haywood, the only boutique hotel in the middle of downtown and the Murphy Arts District. If you are spending a weekend in Hot Springs, make plans now at the Marriott Courtyard close to Lake Hamilton and Oaklawn. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group manages both of these fine properties, and you will rest easy knowing that your every need is taken care of. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels on the web at bphotels.com.
Welcome back to this edition of From the Short Grass. I am your host, Trey Schaap. Sometimes I find myself searching through Twitter and I come across just an account that I'm like, wow, that person's really funny. I found that when I found Big E in Big D. The Big E is Edward Lohr. The Big D is Dallas, Texas, which is where he was born. On the tee, Edward Lohr.
Edward, thanks for joining me on From the Short Grass. I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule. Do you remember the first time you ever picked up a golf club?
I don't know the exact time. I would say My dad probably does. I think I was somewhere between 3 and 4. So started real early. My dad was an accomplished player, played at the University of Colorado with Hal Irwin, actually, for a couple of years. So
yeah, just U.S. came from Open champ.
3 times. And just came from a golfing family. My grandfather played at the University of Michigan. I got an uncle that played at McNeese State, a cousin that played at UTSA. So my younger brother played at SMU. So just started as a family game, and then, you know, probably really fell in love with it, Trey, at kind of the summer between 10 and 11. And that's kind of when I was like, Mom, I want to go to the golf course. And I don't know. It's been a lifelong addiction since then.
What golf course did you go to? I mean, growing up in Dallas, where did you go play?
So I grew up in the suburbs, a town called Rockwall. It was a little small town, 21 miles northeast of Dallas. And the Shores Country Club opened in 1980. I lived in a small town called Roy City, which is 8 miles further away. And then we moved to Rockwall because my dad was a big golfer, obviously, and joined the club there. We were the 6th house in the subdivision, 4th member of the club. So
wow, right in the beginning.
That's where I grew up. Yeah, absolutely.
What was it like? I mean, obviously, you know, I guess during the summer, your mom would drop you off and you'd be out there all day practicing, putting and chipping and playing.
Yeah, was real fortunate. My mom would drop us off. Myself, I actually had my cousin that played at UTSA. He's 4 years older than me. He used to come live with us for the summer. We'd go up every day. My dad owned a pharmacy, and she'd get a $10 roll of quarters, like how we did it way back in the day, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd drop us off with a roll of quarters, and back then, our range machine took quarters. We'd hit balls. We'd play golf. We'd eat lunch. No telling what my parents' club bill was back in the day. We'd swim.
Right.
We'd go play more golf. I mean, and usually at dark, she'd come find us. And that was how I spent my summers.
That was awesome, wasn't it?
It was. And, man, now I go outside and it's 100 degrees and I'm about to melt. And, you know, when I was a kid, I mean, shoot, we'd play 36 holes a day.
Yeah.
3 months.
And not bat an eye at it.
No, not even care.
When did you know that you wanted to compete, Edward, at a level here in the state of Texas and then on a national level?
I started probably playing some local stuff at, you know, 8, 9, and then my dad had a lot of forethought with that, and, you know, he ended up being a college golf coach later in life and, you know, competed growing up. So he kind of started getting us going. And then we started playing like the Texas Oklahoma Junior at 10. And then we used to go to the Future Masters in Dothan, Alabama, probably at 10 or 11. So we'd kind of start playing a few little tournaments on the national level. And then started really having some success at 14, won a couple of AJGAs. And that's kind of when I quit playing. I played 4 sports until I was 14. And then just in high school, I only played golf. So kind of figured out I was pretty good, could beat some people, and I just, you know, I really loved golf. I still love golf to this day, and, you know, obviously became a passion and a profession for a long time. So,
play high school golf at Rockwall High School?
I did. Graduated in 96. We won the state title in 1996. I also won as an individual. We had one of the best, still to this day, I would argue, one of the best high school teams ever. Every kid on our starting five played Division I golf.
Wow.
Came from a town of 10,000, so that's pretty remarkable.
You don't hear about that a lot.
No, and I'll give. There's really two guys that really helped. My dad was one because he was really smart. So all the kids that we played sports growing up with, he was like, hey, you know, just why don't you guys just come try golf? And you know, because they were all good athletes, and they all turned into golfers. And we had a gentleman named Ben Parks, who didn't have any kids. He was a little bit older than my dad, but he played at University of North Texas, was good friends with Ben Hogan and Byron Nelson, and was just turned out to be a mentor to mm-hmm. 30 years worth of golfers that came out of Rockwall. Like I said, for a small town, we had a guy who's about 4 or 5 years older than me that played at Baylor, won a Southwest Conference title. I mean, we had for a town of 10,000 people, we had an inordinate amount of really good golfers, and that's kind of how it all formed. And
sounds like a pretty stacked team, too. Yeah. I mean,
it was awesome.
When did you decide that, okay, I want to go to Oklahoma State? What was the college recruiting like for you, and why Oklahoma State?
So it was basically decided. So back then, so this would have been the summer of 90, sorry, summer of 95. So July 1st is when coaches could be in your living room. And Mike Holder was in my living room on July 1st. And probably within a half hour of talking, I knew that's where I was going to go to school. You know, I think that anyone has a chance to go to school there, it's silly not to. I mean, the tradition, the facilities, just the infrastructure, the alumni, all the support. Amazing place. I took visits to University of Texas, which is where both my parents went, and then UNLV, because who wouldn't want to?
Yeah, but, Vegas.
But I pretty much knew I was going to go to Oklahoma State. It was a, you know, Stillwater's a wonderful college town. It's very similar to Rockwall back then, and loved every minute of it.
What was it like once you got to OSU? And obviously, you got to try and make the team. You did that, and then 2000, you guys won the national championship at Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty awesome. I mean, it took me I didn't qualify for my first couple of tournaments for various reasons. I never really exercised before I went to college, and they have a pretty good workout regimen. Yeah. So for about 2 weeks, I couldn't lift my arms high enough to wash my hair. But I won my second tournament, the Jerry Pate Intercollegiate at Birmingham, and kind of just went on from there. And I won National Freshman of the Year in 1997. But, you know, every year was something different. You'd have kind of guys back and forth. You know, my first couple of years, I played with Bo Van Pelt, who obviously has had a wonderful professional career. And then mm-hmm. Charles Howe was kind of came in after that. So we got better. You know, I think my finishes, I really think we finished like, I don't know, fifth, third, second, first, the 4 years I played, or fourth, second, third, first. So we were always knocking on the door. And, you know, I think we've won 11 national titles there. So it was kind of, you hate to say it's expected, but it was kind of expected.
I was going to say it kind of is expected when you go to Oklahoma State.
Yeah.
You guys had to win that in a playoff, though, against Georgia Tech. You didn't have the match play format at the national championship like they do now. Do you wish you would have had the match play format, or are you glad you did it the way you did it?
I'm glad. I think that the match play is – I know why they did it, but it seems to me like that's more individualistic. I mean, you can literally have three players, and, you know, I think the five-count four – you know, you have to rely on more guys throughout the week. And you know, maybe I'm biased because that's the format I played in. You know, so the playoff was pretty cool. So the first group, it was three OSU guys and two guys from Georgia Tech. And then obviously two OSU guys and three from Georgia Tech. And, you know, you all played the hole and you count the low four scores. So I think that's a better format just because that's what you play the entire year. Like the entire year you play five count four or some. You know, like the Pac-10 used to play six count five. Mm-hmm. And then you have to go to a different format for national. So I think it's just kind of TV makes the rules. So that's kind of what they do.
How did Edward playing at the Shores right off of Lake Ray Hubbard mm-hmm. and playing in the wind here in Texas prepare you for the wind that you would face in Oklahoma?
Well, they're very similar. I think anybody that you see that's from the state of Texas that plays high-level golf can really hit the ball solid. You know, you have to learn how to flight the ball, but to do that, you have to be able to, you know, hit the ball solid to control your, you know, control your motion, control the flight. Growing up on the lake, yeah, we had some pretty damn windy days. And once again, you know, my dad's like, all right, let's get out there. Let's see what you got. Because, I mean, there's, to this day, wind's still the greatest equalizer in the game. I mean, mm-hmm. you can make it hot, cold, rain, it doesn't matter. The guys still shoot the grass off of it. But, you know, you throw a 20 or 25-mile-an-hour wind in there and you can figure out who can really control their golf ball.
When did you decide that you wanted to try and make it a career?
So I turned pro. I played after we won. I played one more tournament. I played the Sonny Hanna Amateur because I was the defending champion up in Pennsylvania. And then after that, I was going to turn pro. I had met with a couple of management companies, so I was fortunate that I had a couple of PGA Tour exemptions lined up. So I felt like I was getting better every year in college, and you know, I was an All-American every year. There's really no formal process to turn pro. You're just like, okay, I'm going to play for money this week, and that's what I did.
Yeah. It's tough out there, though, isn't it?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's you know, it's a numbers game. You know, obviously everyone's goal is to play the PGA Tour, and you've got 125 guaranteed jobs. And the way I relate it, Trey, is that you've got about a 25-year span of guys. So, I mean, you're literally talking five guys a year will end up making it. So I think when you break it down like that, it's very daunting. And it was. I mean, it took me 12 years to make it to the Tour and never really figured out how to stay. But, you know, all of a sudden you go from being the big dog to being one of the dogs. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, when I first turned pro, that was really peak Tiger. I mean, that was the fall of 2000, and I was in the Canadian Open. I missed the cut where he hit that famous shot at Glen Abbey over the water. And, I mean, just trying to get from the parking lot to the locker room, like, I had never seen that many people. So,
yeah,
it's a
different animal.
It's a different animal, absolutely. But, you know, when you're talking about the best 125 or 150 people in the world, I mean, that's what you should expect.
You talk about that atmosphere, Edward, around an event with Tiger Woods in it. I don't know if the general public that has never been to a tour event realizes what that's like. From a player's perspective, what was it like?
Well, there's just a different energy. Most tour events are very well attended, but there's just a different vibe when Tiger is there. I played behind him one year at AT&T, you know, and I mean, just mobs of people. I played in front of him at the U.S. Open 2013 at Marion. And I mean, just like I don't know how people ever went to watch him because you can't see anything, mm-hmm. but just the entire vibe of having Tiger there, you know, from when he stepped on the grounds to when he was done was way different.
I see a couple of trophies over there. What do those mean to you?
So this is from the Chittimacha Louisiana Open in 2013.
You pronounced that well.
Thank you. So this was the best year of golf I played. I think I finished third on the web.com back then.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all significant. I think the older I get and the more I get removed from it, you know, the more significance they have. Because it's hard to win golf tournaments. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're playing the Junior Tour or if you're playing the PGA Tour. There's one guy a week that's going to really feel accomplished. And so, I mean, it's cool. And I have another room that's got a few more. Actually, this is Benton, Arkansas's own Josh Dickinson was my caddy that week.
Oh,
so
how about that?
You never know. Maybe he'll be listening to this.
Yeah. Was it a difficult decision for you, Edward, when you decided, okay, it's time to hang up the clubs professionally?
So not really, Trey. I mean, I had a lot of ups and downs in my career. It had taken me 12 years to get to the Tour, and you know, I ended up winning twice on the web.com and Nationwide, and then I had my card in 14 was the last time and really had a pretty dismal year. And then I really kept going. I had thought about stopping a couple of times. And then I was going to give Q School one more shot in, I guess, the winter of 17. And I shot 66-66 to get my card back. And so that was really satisfying. I'd kind of rebuilt my game. And I'd found an instructor out in Vegas that had really helped me. Joe Mayo, who's actually now with Victor Hovland. And mm-hmm. proving that he really knows what he's doing. He's the smartest guy I ever talked about the golf swing with. But and then 2018, I really had a good year. I thought I was going to get my tour card. I could probably tell you five shots throughout the year that if I'd have had over, I probably would have had my PGA Tour card. But you know, I had a young family. I've got almost 12-year-old triplets. So at that time, you know, I had a lot of demands, and which any father that wants to be a part, you know, should. And so I was conflicted. In 2019, I got off to a decent start, and then I hit a really poor stretch. So I'd started talking to my wife, and it's like, hey, you know, I'm gonna play out the season, and we'll see if, you know, if I keep my card, if I'll keep going, and if not, you know, I'll look at doing something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really at peace, and I think I played like 17 out of 19 weeks. So I was playing you know, because I hadn't really played that great. So I was like, man, I got to keep playing.
Yeah, got to try to make some money.
You know, about the last 6 weeks, we had a talk, and I really played great. I think because I had a lot of freedom. Like, it was like, okay, if I get this done, great, I'm going to keep going. If not, I'll go find something else to do. And I literally had about a 12-footer, 14-footer on the last hole for birdie at Portland. I knew I needed to finish, I think, seventh alone. I ended up, I had a good putt. Didn't make it. I ended up finishing tied for seventh, and I think I missed my card by a couple of spots. It was funny, like, walking off the green, like, I was like, all right, man, I'm done. And, you know, it's been – so that was August 11th of 2019 because I knew it was the day before my anniversary. My wife and I flew home on a red-eye from Portland. And so it's been 4 years and, like, a week, and I don't – I haven't missed it one iota. You know, I've got – like I said, I got kids. I'm going to soccer practice, baseball games. My daughter's really getting into golf, so I've got – more than enough. And I think once you get far enough away, you realize that, man, it's hard. It's a hard life. You know, there's 50 guys that it's amazing for, and they're flying private jets and their family can come with them every week. But, you know, for the rest of us, you know,
it's tough.
It's a tough life. You're gone, obviously, a ton. You're never, the thing that's so hard about pro golf is unless you're one of the super elites, you know, like I said, there's 50 of them that are probably just better, and that's fine. You know, then there's 500 or 600 that are all really good, and it's a crapshoot who's going to make it. But you're never satisfied. You know, you're always worried about what's next. Have I made enough to keep my card? Am I going to keep playing well? Where the hell did my golf game go? So it's hard. It's hard, man. It's hard.
I know. I get it. In following you on Twitter, and for those of you listening, it's Big E and Big D.
That's correct.
On Twitter. You play in some scrambles now, and you always like to take pictures of some of the sets of clubs that you find when you're playing in events, I guess you should say. When did that start?
So I think it probably started my last couple of years when I was playing, you know, just playing pro-ams.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always thought it was funny, kind of a what's in the bag. You know, you would play some good ones where – I remember the one in Boise was always – you always had some great bags there because you had a bunch of grocery guys. And let me tell you, there's not enough margin in the grocery business for them to play a lot of golf. So, you know, you'd see a lot of old Persimmons. And so I just kept it going. I think it's really funny. I always get a lot of interaction. Now I play a lot of, you know, insurance scrambles or whatever. And so I'll try to keep it going because it's an entertaining bit, I think.
The other good bit that I liked when you were playing is, especially from Edward Lower Tracker, is what's the meal at Whataburger before you go play?
Well, I mean, if it's a breakfast my go-to is a number 20 with sausage. So that's the Bob sausage. Or, you know, post-round is it would be a number 5. So that's the bacon cheeseburger meal, all with a medium diet Dr. Pepper. That's my go-to. So
okay.
Those are my two go-tos at Whataburger. Yeah.
Did you make some good friends out on the Corn Ferry Tour? And when you were playing?
I did, yeah. I mean, I have a few guys I still keep in touch. I mean, it's such a – that Corn Ferry, you know, it's such an open door. I mean, there's so many guys, you know, kind of on and off. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I've got guys that I'm still buddies with that I still text that are, you know, playing on the Champions Tour. And then I got some that are still on the Corn Ferry Tour. So, I think that you make a lot of friends. I don't, you know, I would say there's only, you know, you're lucky to make a couple of really close ones just because you know, except you don't ever know where you're going to be.
True.
So it's a traveling circus.
I was just about to say that. It sounds like a traveling circus.
That's exactly what it is, Trey. I mean, you just, you pick up your stuff, and if you're lucky, you get to get on a flight on Sunday and not on Friday or, you know, or in your car, and then you just go to the next town and you're, you know, I was a creature of habit. I like to find an Outback Steakhouse or a Texas Roadhouse or something. And, you know, I was fortunate. I did do a lot of kind of private housing and got to meet a lot of nice folks all around the country, some that I still stay in touch with.
Favorite golf course you've ever played?
So you actually have the hat on, which I mentioned. Carnoustie Golf Links is my favorite. I played the 1999 Walker Cup. And we played at Nairn, but we flew in and played Carnoustie and Troon and Turnberry. And then I got to play there during the – played a Palmer Cup as well, which is just for collegiate players. And then I played – when I was playing the Asian Tour, if you played well enough, you got to play the Dunhill Links.
Right.
So 2000 – yeah, I think I played three times, but 2006 I finished second. So that's my biggest paycheck ever made, but that's, you know, got to play Carnoustie, and I just think under, you know, if it's just normal Scottish weather, I think it's the best golf course in the world because it's no tricks, but you just have to continually hit good shot after good shot.
You mentioned the Walker Cup and the Arnold Palmer Cup. The Walker Cup, obviously, U.S. against Great Britain and Ireland. Mm-hmm. The Palmer Cup, U.S. against collegiate golfers in the U.S. against the international, right, if you will. What were those two events like?
Fantastic. I mean, I played the Palmer Cup. I played first. I played that in, I think, 1998. And I played it. We played at the old course and the new course. So fell in love. I loved the links course, a very creative player. So that just was right up my alley.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously the Walker Cup's that just on steroids. And I think anytime you get to represent your country, I mean, you're one of 10 guys. I mean, that's pretty spectacular.
Were you nervous on the first tee?
Well, of course I was. And back then, we didn't have big old pancake for golf clubs.
Yeah,
true. You know, I think I had a I know at the Walker Cup, I was playing like a PT-13, was kind of like my best club, was a 3-wood, that old small Titleist. But, you know, back then it was hard to make contact. So, yeah. You know, luckily a lot of those courses, they give you a wide margin. But just great lifelong, you know, experiences that, you know, very fortunate to get to do both of them.
How about your Walker Cup captain, Mr. Danny Yates? What did he mean to you?
Yeah, just a great gentleman of the game. I mean, you know, anymore you just don't see elite players that stay amateur, you know, for a long time. You know, his generation guys did because, you know, the money wasn't as good. And but just coming from an incredible golfing family with his uncle Charlie, who he actually was at the Walker Cup. I think he was pretty much in a wheelchair by then. But, you know, a guy almost won the Masters as an amateur and had a great Walker Cup record. Just hanging out with those kind of people for a week.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's cool. And just the relationships that those guys have made over the years and, you know, the bonds. I mean, it's pretty neat stuff.
Fantasy foursome, Edward, you and three others, living or deceased, that you would like to play a round of golf with?
Well, let's see. That I haven't played with?
No, you could have played with them and want to do it again. Or
well,
that you haven't
played
with. So my
favorite foursome ever would be my dad, my Uncle John Robert, and my brother Nick. Just, you know. Famous people that I'd want to play with. I never got to play with Tiger as a pro. I played with him a little bit in junior golf, but I think, and I never played with Phil. I'd want to play with Tiger and Phil, you know, kind of at their peak. Mm-hmm. I got to play with Ernie a bit, kicked his butt a few times, and I played with VJ. You know, those were kind of the top players. And then probably like, you know, just the mystique of Ben Hogan. So I think that would be just to see. I mean, like, no, sorry, Jack Nicklaus. I would do Jack. I just want to see how the greatest of all time, you know, what they did. And I just think that would be super cool to watch.
I think it would be too. Edward, thanks for your time, man. I appreciate it.
Trey, you're welcome, man. Appreciate the chat. That was awesome.
Traveling to Fayetteville to watch a game? Forgot to book a room for the night? Beachwood Pinnacle Hotel Group has you covered. Stay where the fans stay. Stayridge Suites is just south of Baum Walker Stadium and is an all-suite hotel within walking distance of Baum Walker, Bud Walton, and Razorback Stadium. Or you could stay at the Comfort Inn and Suites with newly remodeled rooms throughout the entire property. Find them on the web at bphotels.com. Beachwood Pinnacle Hotels.
I'm Thomas Blackman with Blackman Auctions. I've heard it said that sometimes there are two best days with real estate ownership. It's the day you buy it and the day you sell it. Depending on where you are in your journey, let me help. If you're looking for that outdoor getaway or that home in the city, I can help. If you're looking at selling that outdoor property you haven't seen in 3 years, I can help. Or selling that home in the city that you've outgrown, I can help. Blackman Auctions is your one-stop real estate company. Since 1938, better auctions are Blackman Auctions.
That will do it for this edition of From the Shortgrass. I want to thank Edward Lohr for joining me. Probably need to take me to Whataburger. I owe him a meal. I'll see if we can do that sometime, Big E. Blackman Auctions, one of our great sponsors of From the Shortgrass. Hey, go to their website, blackmanauctions.com, find one of their upcoming auctions, and go. You never know what you're going to find at an auction. Remember, when you find your ball mark on the green, fix it and a couple of more, and I hope to see you sometime soon from the Shortgrass.
You've been listening to From the Shortgrass, a weekly podcast dedicated to the game of golf. This has been a presentation of the Buzz Radio Network.